okay, on the throat, and is some work I've done. Well, it, in fact, it's based on a couple of works, one of them that I published in collaboration with García del Moral, a postdoc in Madrid, Fernando Quevedo, and Ángel Uranga, that was published a long year ago now. And a recent one that was put on the net 3 weeks ago or so with Fuad Saad, a PhD student, and Ángel Uranga. So the outline of the talk is I'm going to, well, everybody has been talking about fluxes, so you don't really need any quick introduction on fluxes. But in any case, I have the transparency, so I put it just on flux quantifications. And after that, I will try to review for you some background material that will be essential in our constructions. One of these essential ingredients is model building with deep brains placed at singularities. And the other essential ingredient is the so-called Klebanov-Strasser throat solution. After this background material, I will try to present you our motivation, actually what we were looking for. And I'll present you the first construction that was in the first paper I was showing you before. This first construction captures a lot of features of basically the physics that we were trying to obtain. But there are some kind of subtleties or maybe obscure or problems that are not solved in that construction. And using like recent developments, recent techniques in understanding this kind of throat, I will present you a second model that improves the first one. Okay, so you know by now that there has been a lot of focus on a lot of effort focused on type 2B compactifications in the presence of three-form fluxes. The basic thing is that these kind of compactifications have very nice features. In the one hand, they introduce an energy density which depends on the internal deformations of the internal manifold. Or in other words, these fluxes induce a superpotential of the Gukov-Wittgenstein and the corresponding scalar potential, which in principle is able to stabilize all complex structure moduli and also the dilaton. These fluxes also have a kinetic term, and therefore they back react, they gravitate, and deform the geometry. And the resulting geometries are of these warp geometries of this kind here, which of course are very interesting from the phenomenological viewpoint along the line of the proposal by Randall and Sundrum to use them in order to generate a hierarchy of scales. There's also a very nice feature that I'm not going to focus on, but it's also very interesting, is the fact that certain components of these fluxes allow to break supersymmetry in a controlled and computable manner. Now, when trying to explain, like obtain realistic models in the context of string theory, there's one feature of the particle physics we observe which is very interesting, and this feature is chirality. In the context of deep brain model building in type 2 and type 1 theories, there are several ways of obtaining chirality. Some of them have already been reviewed in this workshop. Like you can have intersecting brains like the Mirian's talk, or magnetized deep brains like Antonelli's talk, also Marchesano's talk. There is still a third way of obtaining chirality in type 2b or in type 2 in general, which is placing deep brains at singularities. Okay? In particular, I'm going to focus on D3 brains or maybe anti-D3 brains in this family of orbifold singularities here, where this set N is the order N cyclic group. And we are going to follow the so-called bottom-up approach, which was pointed out in this nice paper here, which consists basically of the following. It takes advantage of the fact that D-brains are localized objects in transverse space. So since they are localized objects, what you can do is try to cook up a local geometry with maybe some local singularity, maybe some D-brains. And you can cook them so that you obtain, in the world volume of the D-brains, you obtain some realistic physics, maybe the standard model or something similar. And then the fact that it's a local configuration, you can then embed it into a very different global setup. And some of the features of your model, like maybe the chiral content, et cetera, will not change independently of whatever properties the global embedding has. Now, you know very well that when you put D3 brains in flat space-time, you don't get any chiral theory at all. Actually, you obtain this theory here. However, if you place it in a singularity of this kind, then you have to project the world volume spectrum onto the set of invariant states. And this projection kills part of the gauge group and the matter fields. And then you have the resulting gauge theory when you put these brains in the singularity is a product of n gauge factors. And you have also fields in the bifundamental representations. And this kind of gauge theory can be encoded in a quiver diagram in which you have some nodes, which represent gauge factors, and some arrows, which represent bifundamental fields. Now, there is one particular singularity which looks very nice, and is the case n equals 3, this kind of singularity here, because it's the only one of the family I was showing you before, which leads to three families of chiral fermions. Okay? So the action of this set 3 in the compact space, in the internal space, is given by this action here. And if you're interested in orbifolds which preserve supersymmetry, you moreover have to impose this condition. Okay? Now, when you place ND3 brains in this kind of singularity, your gauge group is a factor, is a product of three gauge factors, and you have three families, three copies of fields in the bifundamental, okay, which looks very appealing from the phenomenological point of view. Since we are working in a local geometry, we don't care for global consistency conditions like tadpole cancellation conditions or whatever. However, we do have to care for the so-called twisted tadpole cancellation conditions, because there are some consistency conditions that appear in your local configuration. And these twisted tadpole cancellation conditions, or in other words, anomaly cancellation in your Kuiper diagram, imposes that the three gauge factors in here should be the same. So you have a UN to the cube gauge group, which of course is not very appealing from the phenomenological viewpoint. However, one thing you can do is to add D7 brains, which are also very natural objects in flux compactifications. These D7 brains relax the twisted tadpole cancellation conditions, and you can have very realistic gauge groups. Actually, the Kuiper diagrams, some of them are represented in here. We are going to see an example at the end of the talk, but for the time being, what I want you to keep in mind is that whenever you have a singularity of this kind, you can add these three brains, and you can add these seven brains, and the resulting physics that you obtain is something very similar to the standard model. Now, we leave these D brains and singularities apart, and we are going to review the so-called Klebanov and Strasser solution, which is, well, the Klebanov Strasser configuration is a very nice one, because it combines in a very nice and simple way both moduli stabilization due to fluxes and also the generation of a warp. Okay? What Klebanov and Strasser were trying to do was to obtain a supergravity dual of a confinement gauge theory. Okay? So what they did was to introduce n D3 brains in a conifold singularity. Okay? This is the conifold. You have your base, which is a 3-sphere times a 2-sphere. And as you go to r equals 0, both the 3-sphere and the 2-sphere collapse to your volume, and you have your conifold singularity. Now, the dual gauge theory of just n D3 brains in this singularity is only SUN cross SUN. And this theory, even though it is just n equal 1 supersymmetric, but still it is conformal, so it doesn't have any very interesting infrared dynamics. What you can do, and what Klebanov and Strasser did, was to introduce additional m fractional D3 brains. These fractional D3 brains should be understood as D5 brains wrapping the 2-cycle in the conifold. And this, the presence of these fractional D3 brains modifies your gauge group to this new one here. And the presence of these fractional brains breaks conformal invariance, and the resulting theory has a non-trivial RG flow. Actually, Klebanov and Strasser showed that this RG flow consists of a chain of cyber dualities, which ends up in a gauge theory which confines, which deforms moduli space, and the deformation, you get a deformation of moduli space. Okay? The supergravity solution describing this kind of configuration, the underlying geometry of this kind of solution is not the singular conifold, but the deformed conifold. Moreover, it has an exponential warp factor, and it has fluxes present. In particular, you have Ramon-Ramon flux along some 3-cycle of the conifold and some H3 NSNS flux along the dual cycle. So the solution is somehow as is depicted in this figure here. So you basically have a region which looks like ADS5 with a highly warped throat, okay? But contrary to what happens to ADS5, it is not singular at r equals 0. As you move at r equals 0, the conifold singularity is smooth because you have a finite size 3-sphere, the 3-sphere of the conifold, okay? Now, in this kind of configuration, there is a region of maximum warping, which is this region here. So whatever physics happens in here, it suffers an exponential redshift with compared to a phenomenon that happens in the, roughly speaking, in the bulk. Okay. Moreover, since you have fluxes in your configuration, you expect moduli stabilization, and in fact, it is what happens. You can see that the fluxes, in particular, this Ramon-Ramon flux on the 3-sphere and this NH3 flux, stabilize the complex structure moduli, which is the size of this 3-sphere, to a finite size. Now, this configuration of D3 brains, both dynamical, both, let's say, fractional and dynamical D3 brains in a conifold had been studied for a long time before Klebanov and Strasser. And in particular, people knew some features, like the fact that you had a throat, etc. However, nobody knew before them what happened at the end of the throat, what happened in the limit R equals 0. So what Klebanov and Strasser did was, OK, we want to know what happens at the bottom of the throat at R equals 0. But we also have the holographic dual description of this geometry. We have the holographic dual description, which is this gauge theory here I was showing you before. So, and we know also that the radial direction in this ADS is kind of the holographic direction in our gravity gauge duality. So if we want to learn what happens at the end of the throat near R equals 0, what we have to look at what happens in the infrared limit of this gauge theory. What happens to this gauge theory as we go to lower energies? Now, this gauge theory has a moduli space, which is represented by this equation here, where M is a matrix of mesons. Now, the presence of the M fractional brain breaks conformal invariants. They computed the beta functions, and they realized that as you go down in your RG flow, what happens is that this node of the gauge group enters a strong coupling before the other. And what the Klebanov and Strasser did was to do a cyber duality of this node, and they substituted this theory by the cyber dual theory, which is this one here. Here, so you obtain a new theory with the rank of the gauge group has changed, et cetera, but this gauge theory is now weakly coupled. Now you go on your RG flow, and what they found is that now it is this gauge factor which enters a strong coupling. They cyber dualize it, they obtain a new theory, et cetera, and you can, of course, go on with this kind of thing. You may notice that at each step, each time you do a cyber duality, the rank of your gauge group decreases by, roughly speaking, a factor of m. So, of course, you reach a point in which you basically don't have any more D3 brains, in a sense. You have run out of this n, and what you obtain, what you expect to obtain, is basically nothing but a confining SUM gauge factor, which confines, but of course, this doesn't give you any information of what is happening at the end of this road. So what Klebanov and Strasser did was, okay, if we want to know what happens in this region here, let us introduce m additional probe D3 brains, which are going to probe my geometry. So let us introduce these probe D3 brains. Of course, these D3 brains in the world volume, they have some scalar fields, which parameterize the position of the D-brain in transverse space. So in a sense, these scalar fields carry the information of what is the transverse geometry. Now, in the dual gauge theory, the equivalent of adding these D3 brains is to go up in the cascade to this gauge theory here. Now, if you analyze the infrared dynamics of this gauge theory, they found that this gauge factor enters a strong coupling before, but now this gauge group has a property, which is that the number of colors is equal to the number of fermions. Now, if you go to cyber papers, cyber tells you that the kind of infrared dynamics of this kind of theories is a quantum deformation of moduli space. So what happens is that your moduli space is no longer given by the determinant of m equals 0, but to this equation here. Now, you expect, of course, that the moduli space of this gauge theory is telling you about the geometry of your infrared, of your, the bottom of your throat. So now you define these kind of complex coordinates, which are given nothing but the mesons of this gauge theory. And this equation is telling you that the moduli space of your gauge theory is the deformed conifold, not the singular conifold. And this is the way in which Klebanov and Strasser deduced why the dual geometry at the end of your throat was the deformed conifold. Now, after this background material, let me tell you what we were looking for, which was our motivation. We wanted to combine the nice features of model building with these deep brains at singularities with the Klebanov-Strasser solution, which is nice because it has moduli stabilization and also you have warping. So basically what we were looking for was some kind of Calabi-Yau, which contains a singularity. And this singularity admits a complex deformation, which means that you can deform the singularity and obtain a finite size three cycle. You cannot see the three cycle. Well, this is a three cycle, okay? So once you have this deformation, this three cycle, you can introduce a big enough quanta of flux along this three cycle. The flux back reacts on the geometry and generates a warp throat. Sorry. And at the end of your throat, you don't have a singular manifold, but you have all the structure of three cycles. And of course, we wanted to have the standard model at the end of this throat, because then the standard model physics will have a hierarchy with respect to the Planck scale. However, we know that by placing D3 brains or D7 brains in a smooth manifold, we don't get any chiral theory. So we want, moreover, we want to have a singularity at the end of the throat. Okay? So in the original singularity, we don't only want to be able to grow a three cycle of finite size, but also to have a singularity of this kind here, so that when you introduce the flux, both the three cycle and the singularity are pushed to the end of the throat where you plan to have your standard model. Now, you will agree with me that if you were able to build such a thing, it looks very promising. On the one hand, you have fluxes, so you expect that most moduli are stabilized. Moreover, you have the standard model degrees of freedom present in the configuration. And moreover, these degrees of freedom are in a region in transverse space where there is a very exponential warping, and they suffer a hierarchy with respect to the bulk physics. Of course, you have also the potential to fix all moduli along the proposal of KKLT and to leave this kind of vacuum to the Sitter vacuum. You could also try to implement deep brain anti deep brain inflation, as in Katsukalos, Linden, Malathena, McAllister, and Trivedi, etc. Moreover, you could even think of being more ambitious and trying also to obtain what the holographic dual of your supergravity description, of your supergravity solution is. Now, in the first article I was telling you about, we were trying to do this. So our first idea was, OK, you want something which looks very much as Klebanov-Strassler, but you want like the deformed conifold, but you also want a singularity. So why not just taking the Klebanov-Strassler solution and modding out by a set tree symmetry, which leaves you one fixed point of this kind? Okay. Of course, if you were able to do that, you were done. But to the best of our knowledge, we couldn't find any set tree symmetry that was suitable for doing this kind of thing. So of course, the next thing is, OK, if you cannot do it with just one conifold, why not try it with three conifolds? So this is what we did. I don't want to enter into the detail, but you can do it by using these techniques of building Calabi-Yau as a double elliptic vibration. So you have a base and a double elliptic vibration. In this kind of language, the conifold looks something like this. And what we did was, as I was telling you, take three copies of a conifold and mod it out by a set tree symmetry, which acts on the base, but also on the fibers. Now, this symmetry leaves one fixed point, which is this one here. So basically, you have what you were looking for, a structure of three cycles and a singularity of the kind you wanted. So now you can introduce a beacon of quanta of flux along these three cycles. And what happens is that the flux back reacts and generates a throat. And at the end of the throat, you have all your structure, but also your singularity. And of course, now you are free to put D3 brains, anti-D3 brains, D7 brains, or whatever here, and obtain some realistic physics. OK, so this was the picture in the first article. Now, the point is that this picture has some problems. From the supergravity side, you have the problem that the geometry is quite complicated. You have a very dirty singularity. You have three conifolds and then the singularity. So you don't really have any metric or anything. So you, in fact, you are not really sure of what happens at the end of the throat. You don't really sure of whether you have a singularity or not. You don't have any way to check it directly in the supergravity side. However, you could say, OK, I have learned from Klebanov and Strassler that I don't have any need of any metric or anything. If I know what the holographic dual gauge theory is, I just can go to the holographic dual gauge theory and find what happens in the infrared limit of the theory. And then this infrared limit is going to tell me what is happening at the end of my throat. Okay? Now, the point is that in this example, we don't even know what the holographic dual gauge theory is. Okay? However, in the late year, or even months, there has been a great development of the understanding of this kind of warped throats. And well, in a number of papers, which well, I have just taken three representatives here, but I guess there are a lot of more. So I apologize to the authors that are not here and should be here. Now, the outset of all these works is basically the following, something that we know already. And is the fact that warped throats appear naturally whenever we have a singularity that admits a complex deformation. That is, if we have a singularity that we can smooth by making a three-cycle big enough, then there appears a naturally there appears a warped throat if we introduce a big amount of flux along this three-cycle, because the flux back reacts and generates my throat. Okay? And at the end of the throat, I don't have any singularity anymore. What I have is all the structure of three-cycles. Now, people have understood much better what the holographic dual gauge theories are of these kind of things. And in particular, well, the gauge theory dual is basically the gauge theory living in the world volume of n D3 brains placed in your singularity. Okay? Now, this is the holographic dual gauge theory. In general, for some of these singularities, the holographic dual gauge theory is a quiver gauge theory with a lot of nodes, a lot of arrows, etc. Now, this gauge theory, in the presence of suitable fractional brains, this gauge theory suffers a cascade of cyber dualities until you get to a final point. The resulting gauge theory has a strong dynamics, deforms the moduli space, and the resulting deformed moduli space is describing for you what happens at the end of your throat, okay? Exactly as things work in Klebanov and Strassler. So you can now try and say, okay, let's try to face the same motivation as before, but now with all these ideas in mind. So at the beginning, we wanted a warp throat. So what these new insights tell us is that if you want a warped throat, you better construct a singularity that admits a complex deformation. But after the deformation, we don't want to be left with a flat space or with a smooth space. But we want that after the deformation, we get this kind of singularity. So that when we introduce the flux on this three cycle and the flux back reacts and generates our throat, this singularity is also pushed to the end of the throat. So by using techniques of toric geometry, also I'm not going to enter into the detail. But believe me if I tell you that these techniques on toric geometry allow you to generate a lot of singularities of this kind. One of them is the one I have depicted here. So you basically start with the toric diagram of a C3 over Z3 singularity, which is this toric diagram, these three lines in blue. Okay, and now you add a new line, which is this line in red. Okay, now adding this line means that you don't have any this singularity any longer, but you have a new singularity. which happens to be the a set free quotient of the so-called suspended pinch point singularity, which is this is given by this equation here, and which was already known in the literature. Okay. Now, this singularity admits a complex deformation, much in the same way as Simeon was telling you on Wednesday morning. If you separate this red line in a transverse space, the segment that is joining these two subwebs is a three-cycle, it's topologically a three-cycle. Now, if you introduce a flux on it, the flux back reacts and generates your throat, but at the end of your throat, you keep this kind of diagram, which is your singularity, okay? Now, moreover, of course, you could tell me why. Well, I mean, this doesn't seem very rigorous. You have added here a line, but why don't you have a line which is not parallel to any of these segments, or why don't you add any other more complicated web diagram or whatever? Of course, you can do that, and whatever change you introduce to this original diagram, you have a new singularity which admits also complex deformation. The nice thing about this is you know what the holographic dual gauge theory is. When you put ND3 brains in this kind of singularity, when you put ND3 brains, you know, and also the 7 brains if you want, you know what the holographic dual gauge theory is. And the holographic dual gauge theory is this horrible quiver theory here that has nine nodes that I have depicted here with the rank, okay? And these are like nodes coming from D3 brains, but I also added D7 brains to make the model more realistic, and these are D7 brains. Now, in the presence of these M fractional brains in here, you have a non-trivial RG flow. You can follow it, compute the beta functions, and you obtain that these three nodes enter a strong coupling before the rest. So what you do is cyber-dualize them. You obtain a new theory. And in this new theory, as you go on your RG flow, these three nodes enter a strong coupling before. So now you cyber-dualize them again. And you go on and on with all these cyber-dualities until you reach a point in which you cannot do any cyber-duality anymore because you don't have enough brains. And this point is, this quiver diagram here. Now you analyze the infrared dynamics of these gauge factors, and what you realize is that they do have non-trivial infrared dynamics. They are strongly coupled, but this infrared dynamics is no longer a quantum deformation of moduli space as happened in the Kalman-Strasser solution. The infrared dynamics manifest in the appearance of an Affleck-Dyne cyber superpotential, but the effect is very much the same. What happens is that some mesons of your theory get a BEF. In particular, there is a meson associated to this gauge factor, which is joining these two gauge groups. There is a meson of this gauge factor joining these two gauge groups, and the same for this with these gauge groups. So wherever those mesons get a BEF, basically those gauge groups are broken to some linear combinations. This infrared dynamics collapses the quiver diagram, and the resulting gauge theory you obtain is a very nice gauge theory. You obtain an SU3 times SU2 times U1 of hypercharge gauge group with three generations, hypercharge given by this generator here. So you basically obtain very realistic physics, something that is very similar to the standard model. Now, there are two very nice things I find of this kind of computation. One of them is that we have done it in the holographic dual picture. Okay, so now, we have gone to the holographic dual description, and we have calculated what happens in the infrared. And in the infrared, we have obtained this theory. Now, this theory happens to be, it's easy to see, it is in the literature. This theory is the theory living in the world volume of ND3 brains and D7 brains in the C3 over Z3 singularity. No? Okay, the fact that you obtain it as the last product of your infrared dynamics tells you that what happens at the end of the throat is basically also that you have your deformed geometry with a singularity of this kind. So now, despite the fact that in the supergravity side, you don't know what the metric is, but you know, due to the holographic microscopic description, that you have a singularity of this kind. Moreover, your standard model has appeared as the last product of a cascade of, okay, I'm about to finish. Your standard model appears as the last step of a cascade of cyber-dualities. So in a sense, the fields of your standard model are not elementary fields, but are composite fields of a higher theory that has condensed and has given you the standard model. So in a sense, this is a very nice realization of technicolor in string theory. Just the last slide is, I don't want to enter into the detail again, but with these same techniques of surface geometry, you can build very interesting geometries, which if you're able to cook up local singularities that admit not only one, but two complex deformations or more complex deformations, then you can grow different three cycles which are independent, introduce different quanta of flux along these three cycles, and then these fluxes back react and generate for you geometries of this kind in which you have just one throat, but you have different regions of the throat with different warp factors, okay? this is an example of a complex cone over the Petzo 3 surface, which is not very realistic. It admits two complex deformations, but at the end of the throat, you obtain just a smooth space. However, in this paper here, we introduce some modification, and you have this realistic throat. When you have two complex deformations, you have your throat in here, but you have a singularity of the C3 over Z3 type, and you have your standard model here. Let me conclude. So I have tried to present you a concrete example in which you can find the standard model at the end of a highly warped throat, and also what the holographic dual description of this geometry is, in which your standard model appears as the last step of a whole cascade of cyber dualities. Now, of course, there are a lot of things that you can do. And a very desirable thing would be to try and obtain a realistic way of breaking supersymmetry in this kind of geometries, which, moreover, keeps the geometry of your throat controlled. Also, it would be nice to try to adapt these ideas to more flexible deep brain configurations, like intersecting brains or magnetized brains. And also, it would be interesting, I didn't mention it, but the D7 brains we were introducing in the supergravity side, we were ignoring the back reaction of the D7 brains. In the dual side, we were basically in the quench approximation. It would be nice to understand it better, the back reaction. So I guess that's all. Thanks.
Any question for Juan, Shami?
Now, in this kind of, the point would be, in this kind of construction, would be to obtain everything that you want to be in the bulk, to be living in the world volume of some D7 brains, because the D7 brains are not localized at the end of the throat, but are like along the throat. So you should manage to do, I mean, you can do it maybe even without this throat or anything, just get a singularity, and you try to construct a model in which your Higgs sector is localized in the singularity, but your D7 brains, the rest.